what was a boundary as being a dynamical object, some sort of actual physical brain. And we're going to look at what's the Israel equations are simply a set of dynamical equations, very like the Einstein equations, but living within the hypersurface. So if you just remember, was it yesterday? I'm trying to remember that we derived. So we showed how the full gravitational action was the Einstein-Hilbert action for the bulk, and then a boundary term, which was the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term. If we were doing a Lagrangian variational principle, we would simply set delta G equal to zero on the boundary and we'd just get our bulk Einstein equations. But today I want to envisage a situation where the boundary is itself potentially dynamical. So basically, we're sort of allowing delta GAB to be non-zero on delta M, or this is allowing the boundary to be dynamical. Then we should get another set of equations with this. So this sort of object here is kind of similar to the Einstein tensor. So we're going to have something concerning KAB minus KHAB. So in essence, sort of think of what we're doing here. If this is like a wall, we're imagining that this would be a physical setup. We might have our manifold M plus with a normal N plus, and then we'd have a manifold M minus with a normal N minus. And then we might also imagine, and this is in a sense I'm going to make more or less rigorous. So I'm imagining I've got this boundary, sigma. It's like a submanifold, a hypersurface within our manifold. And physically, this would be some very thin object. And our full space-time would be both sides of our wall plus our wall. But from the perspective of this action principle, I'm thinking of that as a manifold with a boundary and a sort of the other side, another manifold M minus, with the same boundary. And so in this case, we would see by looking at our variational principle that KAB minus KHAB summed on both sides in this case would have to be 8 pi g SAB. So what this means is that this is the sum for so that's just kind of looking at this in a from the perspective of using a boundary term and saying that, imagining that I have living on the boundary some energy momentum. So as I said, there's a few things that could worry you about this. Although in fact, that argument, that's a sort of back of the envelope type of derivation of Israel equations. What I want to kind of dig into and just go into a bit more depth about to justify this is to examine this process of taking a delta function, in other words, approximating some small but finite source by a sheet, a zero width sheet. So I want to think about that, what I mean by that delta function. And I'd also like to sort of derive this relation just from the higher dimensional Einstein equations. So I'm just going to approach this from a slightly different angle, which will show that in fact the boundary term method does work, and this is and taking a zero width limit of a codimension one object is actually a well-defined thing to do. So Israel derived these equations in the 1960s via a process of integrating up the Einstein equations. And of course, the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term didn't come till the 70s, so it's one of those post-dating methods. So what I want to do now is to imagine, is to take take a limiting procedure of a finite width object. So I'm about to define Z, but the picture I've got is that I have an energy momentum tensor which is only non-zero in a very small band. And so I'm going to take my, going to coordinatize my manifold by saying that sigma, so I've got a hypersurface here at Z equals zero, I'm then going to say that Z is the proper distance from this surface sigma. This point here has coordinates sigma A, and I'm just simply going to say that along an integral curve here, so I integrate out across a normal to the surface and say sigma A is constant. So So this is a well-defined coordinate system in a neighborhood of my surface sigma. I'm not saying it's globally well-defined. Eventually, you could imagine that some of these normal geodesics will cross. There could be caustics, yeah?
In the equation which defines sigma, so the equation in the middle bottom, the TAB, SAB, don't we want to integrate over the small sigmas?
Sorry?
Don't we want to integrate over the small sigmas? So there, because like this, we have a delta function of the full dimensionality. We only want the delta function of the dimensionality, which is the co-dimensional.
I'm sorry, I can't make out your question.
Yeah, why are we not integrating over the small sigmas in that defining equation for SAB, the equation which we just pointed out? No?
So what I've written there is a little bit loose in the sense of I haven't defined what I mean yet by that delta function. So what I mean there is that the idea there is that the energy momentum tensor is only non-zero when the coordinates lie on the manifold capital sigma. And so I can write my manifold capital sigma as x mu of these little sigma a, where the little sigma a are coordinates on my intrinsic coordinates on my manifold capital sigma. So what that expression that I've underlined is meant to represent, but I haven't actually defined it, is it's meant to represent a localization of the energy momentum tensor on sigma. And what I now want to do is to argue that that is a well-defined process by imagining that my sigma, this is my idealized sigma, my surface submanifold, codimension one, I'm imagining that I'm thickening it out just a little bit here. I'm making it a finite width delta. And where delta is, I'm defining my proper distance by simply taking the normal to sigma and integrating out along a bulk geodesic. So that defines me a unique distance from sigma, provided I remain within the radius of curvature. So as long it close to sigma, this is a well-defined process. So I'm setting up a manifold, a local chart on the manifold, the full space time, given by my coordinates, intrinsic coordinates to sigma, plus proper distance away from the submanifold. So I'm not sure what your...
Well, the original worry was that because we have the stress, the energy localized on a hypersurface, on a hypersurface of codimension one, we want the delta function to be of strength one. Basically, we only want one integration to kill all delta functions completely. And the way it is written, it seems that delta function has strength, which is the dimension of the space time of that one. So we have one delta function for every mu.
Well, no, because this is just localizing my coordinates. If I thought of this over here in terms of these coordinates, then my submanifold sigma would be defined by z equals zero. So that really would just be delta of z. But I don't want to sort of write something down which was so directly coordinate dependent. I mean, this is just, I think you may be trying to read too much into this. Sort of impressionistic expression. This is simply saying, while x mu is on sigma for some value of sigma a, right? These sigma a vary over the whole, the whole manifold. Then this is non-zero. So it's non-zero here, sort of at this point, it's non-zero over here, and it's non-zero over here. But it's only, but the regions in which it's zero are only a sort of one parameter, you know, family, which is along the normal. That's what I meant by that, anyway. So, now I'm trying to sort of make this a little more clear, what I mean by this hypersurface or this submanifold. And I'm doing that by setting up a coordinate system, a coordinate chart of my full manifold, so that I can then look at the Einstein equations on the full manifold. And I can see if this delta function, this limiting process, is in fact well defined. So in this case, not sure I've got my right. So this is my coordinate system. M is now, I'm thinking of M is now the full manifold. So what we're hoping this is going to end up being is the union of M minus and M plus and, of course, sigma. And I want to, this is my Z coordinate here. So the normal is associated to d by dz in these coordinates. So if I'm looking at this now as a sort of physical object, very thin object in some space-time, then what I'm doing here is I'm matching m minus and m plus, which means that the intrinsic metric on both sides has to be the same. And also, the other thing I just want you to notice is now that I've used z to coordinatize my normal direction, it's actually going to flip the sign of n minus.
The second line in the last blackboard, I'm not sure I understood what did you mean by these
Heaviside step function. So all I know is that what I mean is T is zero something zero, where this is localized to width delta in Z.
So here Z is the value at which we have this submanifold or hypersurface.
So sigma is the surface Z equals zero. So that is my submanifold.
Why don't we have Z equals zero on the Heaviside function?
Because I'm thickening my wall. My wall is very thin. Okay?
Yeah, you wrote Z plus delta over 2.
Have I got my signs wrong? That tells me that Z is bigger than minus delta over 2. So this is telling me this is only non-zero within. Within a delta over 2 of each side. So in this description, my two metrics on each side needn't be the same. All that I need is that the induced metric agrees on each side. Okay, so now what I want to do is to look at the Einstein equations for this thin wall and argue that I can take a zero thickness limit. So my Einstein equations will be that my four-dimensional Ricci tensor is related to my four-dimensional stress-energy-momentum tensor. So now what I want to do is to use the Gauss-Kadatze equation, but I'm now sort of thinking about taking what this coordinate system does is provide a local foliation of the manifold in terms of sigma. So we have z is 0, z is a little bit, you know, z is 2 epsilon, z is 3 epsilon, so on and so forth. So my three-dimensional R if I contract the Gauss equation that we obtained, I get that my three-dimensional curvature is equal to my four-dimensional curvature minus these kk terms, or d minus one and d-dimensional curvatures. So let me just think about this term here. Remember that h here, h is simply g plus nn. So one of those pieces will give me the Ricci tensor in the higher dimensional space-time, which I can then relate to my energy momentum tensor. And then I'm left with these two normal vectors contracted with the Riemann tensor. So I use the Riemann identity. So the first term here is a normal covariant derivative of grad d and b, so that's kbd. In this case. And the second term, I've got n contracted with the gradient of kcb. But of course, n is normal to kcb, which is a sort of object parallel to the submanifold. So I simply sort of do a sort of shift, pull the n inside and simply take the derivative grad C, grad D of NC, so I've got KK here. But then I can replace my normal derivative by a Lie derivative. So in the end, if I put all that together, I'm simply gathering everything together there. I had in the first term with the Riemann, I've got the contraction of the four-dimensional Riemann tensor, which gives me the Ricci. I had the two normals contracted with the Riemann, which gave me grad n of k, which I've used, I've sort of replaced that by a Lie derivative, and then I've got some extra kk-type terms. So why did I go through that fuss? Well, if I've got a Lie derivative, the Lie derivative is something which is a sort of genuine geometric derivative. And so what I can then do is I can integrate along my normal geodesics, sort of across my wall from minus delta onto to delta on 2, these terms here, so notionally what I'm doing, the extrinsic curvature terms are objects which just lie on the submanifold. They're regular on sigma. This is an intrinsic object to sigma, so that's regular on sigma. This object here is related to the energy momentum tensor, which we're going to argue is now peaked close to z is 0. And this is a derivative of k. So if I integrate along the curves defined by n, I'm going to sort of get a difference between the extrinsic curvature on one side and the extrinsic curvature on the other side. So that's the sort of notion of what I'm doing here. So the idea is, if we integrate over the z-coordinate, in other words, what we're really imagining that we're doing is we're sitting along these geodesics whose tangent vector is given by n, and so I'm just integrating up along a curve, and so if I'm integrating over a short distance then of something which is quite regular, all I'm going to get is something proportional to that coordinate distance delta. So I integrate the Lie derivative of k, and I get the difference in k on either side of this thin blanket, if you like, rather than a wall. And then I'm now going to define the integral of my energy momentum tensor across the wall to be SAB. So this is really how you define a delta function. It's not really a function, it's a distribution. And you define it by saying, well, you know, if I integrate across where the delta function is, then I get, well, 1, or in this case, SAB. So I'm saying that in the limit, as delta goes to 0, I'm going to still allow myself to have a non-zero integral for TAB. So that's how you define a delta function. And so as I take the limit, delta goes to 0, what I end up with is just a relation between the jump in extrinsic curvature from one side of the wall to the other and the what we're going to say is the energy momentum tensor of the wall itself. So if I take the trace here, then I've got that delta K is equal to minus 8 pi G S on 2. So the Israel equations are normally given in that form. So if you go through this argument for arbitrary dimensionality, where are the colored chalks? We've gone walkies. Annoying. In arbitrary dimension, that half there would be 1 over d minus 2, but the Israel equations still end up the same. So there's two features, I've said it already, but I just want to emphasize it, about the Israel equations. One is that it is giving you a dynamical equation for a hypersurface, but the other thing is that it's also showing that you can take a delta function in source, in gravity, provided that it's codimension 1. So we're not talking about linearized gravity here. We can always do linearized gravity with delta function sources and just say, well, approximately far away from the source, I can say, you know, my source, say, if you want to do a point source in GR, you could say I have some, you know, delta 3 of R. So I have a delta function source, I get my linearized metric, and that's good as a far field approximation. The problem is that usually as you go close to sources in gravity, that approximation breaks down. Gravity is a highly nonlinear theory, and so a delta function is not a good approximation if you want to go to very short distances. So if you want to approach your source very closely. But the key thing about the Israel equations, or what Israel showed, was that if you have a shell of matter, so something which is codimension 1, then there is a good delta function description. The delta function description works at the nonlinear level. And it's essentially because you've only got one normal. So if you tried sort of any nonlinearity would come from sort of trying to take, projection of completely normal Riemann tensor, So you would be trying to do four ends contracted with the Riemann, and of course that's zero by the symmetries of the Riemann tensor. So for a co-dimension one object, delta function is true at the nonlinear order. That is not true for any higher co-dimension. So just a word of warning, because you'll see that a lot in the literature. You'll see delta functions of arbitrary co-dimensionality, and it basically treat it with caution. It's okay in some sense and at some level, but it's not completely true down to the full nonlinear order. So let's just convince ourselves that this formalism actually works. And I want to do a couple of examples, both of which you've seen before in a slightly different context, but I want to show how you work with it. So we looked at domain walls. When I talked about objects in four-dimensional gravity, and I want to just derive the gravitational field of the domain wall using this formalism rather than trying to build up the metric from scratch. So we're going to look at the symmetric domain wall. And I want to consider a hyperboloid in flat space-time. So in Minkowski space-time, I'm taking a hyperboloid. R squared minus T squared is equal to lambda squared. So in terms of the coordinates here, x mu sigma A, my coordinates are going to be some proper time tau, theta, and phi. And my manifold coordinates, x mu sigma A, are going to be where I pick, so these are polar coordinates, so this is T, R, and of course theta and phi. So I pick angular coordinates to coincide with polar, my polar coordinates, and then I've chosen a parameterization of the T and R. I've got to have T squared, R squared minus T squared is lambda squared, so that's guaranteed by using the Sinch and Kosh, but I also have chosen this parameterization so that x dot mu actually has length 1. So tau is a proper time for an observer living on the wall. So that's what I've done. My normal, if I look at my lower index normal, so again, my normal is normalized. So let me compute the extrinsic curvature. So my extrinsic curvature, my normal vector has no theta or phi components, So if I compute the extrinsic curvature in the theta and phi direction, I'm only going to get things proportional to the connection in polar coordinates. So that's going to be, well, nr is just cosh tau on lambda. The gamma r theta is just minus r. So that's r cosh tau on lambda, which if I look at my r coordinate, it's lambda cosh tau on lambda. Which is also equal to r squared on lambda, which is minus 1 on lambda, we call it h theta. And so if I look for the phi direction, I've also got k phi is minus 1 on lambda h phi. Now, rather than look for TR components of the extrinsic curvature, I'm going to compute K tau now, which is X mu comma tau, X nu comma tau, grad mu, N mu. So I'm projecting the extrinsic curvature onto the world sheet, the wall, sorry, the brain. So if I want to calculate the k tau, all I've got to do is take a covariant derivative along x dot of x dot, okay? So my x dot is this cosh sinh. There are no connection components with t and r. There's no Christoffel symbols, no non-zero ones with just pure t and r pieces in them. And so this is simply minus n nu x double dot nu, because I'm taking the proper derivative with respect to tau when I project along x dot. So that's, if I look at what my n is, it's going to be sinh tau on lambda times the derivative of x dot, which is another 1 on lambda sinh squared, then minus cosh tau on lambda, the derivative of x dot r. So what I get for my k tau is simply minus 1 on lambda times 1, which is gamma tau. So what I've shown is, if I write it in intrinsic language, I've shown that my extrinsic curvature is proportional to the intrinsic metric. And so this tells me, this is just computing on one side.
Why do you say I'm like gamma?
Sorry? Because here I've projected into sigma. These are the sigma a, you know, in terms of the original notation, those sigma a coordinates. This is an intrinsic quantity. In this case, it would be exactly the same, because in terms of, if I wanted to write here, gamma phi, right, is equal to x mu comma phi, x nu comma phi, g mu nu. And of course, these x, if you look at x mu of sigma a, it's only the phi component which is non-zero. So this is really like delta mu phi, if you like. So it's the same thing here. This is just G5 phi, which is the same as H5 phi. So I put gamma because in once allow for the theta and phi coordinates, it doesn't make any difference. As soon as I'm going to the tau coordinate, that really is an intrinsic coordinate. It's not a space-time coordinate, at least not the way I've written. My bulk space-time was coordinatized by T and R, not by tau. So if I work through this, I find that my stress energy momentum tensor for this wall is equal to 1 over 2 pi g lambda gamma AB. So if you compare this to what we wrote down when we thought about the wall, we said that sigma was equal to this length scale, I think we had, I think our length scale was equal to 1 over 2 pi g sigma, if I remember rightly. So that, if you go back to the lecture on the domain wall, that was exactly the result that we obtained. So the Israel formalism gives us the same result. The second example I want to look at is something called a Randall-Sundrum model. Again, we mentioned this, which is a domain wall in five-dimensional anti-de Sitter space. So our space-time, our anti-de Sitter space-time, is foliated by a sort of set of flat surfaces which have an overall warp factor. So we derived this by looking at the warp factor. And our wall or our brain sits at z equals zero, just like that sketch over there. So our normal is d by dz. Our extrinsic curvature is simply given by a connection piece. Because n is just a constant. So if I look at my extrinsic curvature, it's simply proportional to eta mu nu. So my extrinsic curvature is just minus k eta mu nu. So if I look at my Israel equations and put in what my delta k is, delta extrinsic curvature is minus 2k eta mu nu. And so it shows that what I wrote down for my my intrinsic energy momentum is consistent. So we also discussed that solution when I was talking about walls. So the only thing I just want to comment on is to just try and just think a little bit more generally. So what if I change at my energy momentum? So I just want to just sort of think a little bit about what I get if I just mix things up a little bit, just change things slightly. So if I look at what my Israel equations give me, I still want to keep Z2 symmetry. And an ADS5 bulk. So that tells me that my Riemann tensor signs so my Riemann tensor is still a constant curvature tensor. So I still got my Israel equations, which are relating my extrinsic curvature to the local energy momentum density. But now my S is going to be something that's proportional to this intrinsic or parallel induced metric, plus some extra little piece, T mu nu. So in this case, that tells me that if I write in what my SAB is, I've got 6k over 8 pi g HAB plus T, and then I've got minus 4/3, 6k over 8 pi g plus T, over 3 HAB. So putting that together, I can see that I've got something that looks like a sort of five-dimensional Einstein-type equation. And then I've got minus 2k, HAB. So now if I go back to looking at that contracted, the contracted Gauss, top board on the right-hand side. So I'm going to sort of go back to look at the trace of the Gauss equation. So if I contract, if I look at the contraction of the Riemann tensor with two normals, because my Riemann tensor is just this nice constant curvature piece, I get minus k squared into g plus nn, which is minus k squared h. So that's that term. I've got the, so I should really strictly write, my H terms there to make sure I get the parallel component of R. And so reducing this, so now I want to use my expression for my energy momentum tensor. So I'm replacing this with 6kh plus t. So I'm going to state what the answer is, given that I've run out of time. So if you input what the stress energy tensor is, or you could have inputted for k in terms of t and h, keep terms only to order t, so this is true only up to order t, you find that from the four-dimensional perspective, your Einstein equations, RAB minus a half R intrinsic metric, is equal to 8 pi g, so this here gk is g5k, and we're going to say that's g4 times TAB. So what I've very rapidly and sketchily argued here is that by looking at the Gauss equation, not only by the Israel formalism have I been able to write down what my wall space-time is, I've actually gone a little bit beyond this simple, nice, flat foliation of anti-de Sitter. I've considered a perturbation of my space. I've said, suppose it wasn't quite one of these pure wall stress energy momenta. Suppose it's got a little bit of extra stuff mixed in. And then I've looked to linear order, and I've obtained the Einstein equations. So that's four-dimensional Einstein, not higher-dimensional Einstein. So we'll probably come back to that theme either tomorrow or Thursday. But I better stop before Renata beats me up. So.